Hello and welcome to the latest edition of Football Talk from the Yorkshire Post, where we'll be discussing some of the latest talking points from the world of football with members of our football writing team. On this week's episode, we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall, to discuss all of the latest developments affecting our local clubs. Don't forget you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging onto our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com, as well as checking out our various Twitter feeds, the main one being at @YPSport. If you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. And if you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com.
yorkshirepost.co.uk.
As mentioned earlier in the intro, this week we're joined by Chief Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Stuart Rayner, and Football Writer for the Yorkshire Post, Leon Wapshall. Good morning, guys.
Morning. Hello.
Morning. Right, this week we saw Hull City draw 0-0 with Watford, which dealt the Tigers' playoff hopes a significant blow. Middlesbrough recorded their third draw in five games with a 1-1 draw with Ipswich Town. Rotherham United also claimed a point when they drew 0-0 with Birmingham City. Barnsley fell to a narrow and frustrating 3-2 defeat at the hands of fellow playoff hopefuls Blackpool. We'll be covering them later on in the show. Doncaster Rovers bounced back from being 2-0 down to win 4-2 over Barrow and claim an impressive ninth successive victory, which was then followed by a comprehensive 4-1 victory when they visited Colchester United, which now sees them enter the playoff spots as well. Bradford City claimed their fourth victory from five games with a 3-2 victory over Walsall, which saw Andy Cook come back to haunt his old club by scoring twice for the Bantams before recording a 2-1 victory against Barrow. And Harrogate Town's playoff hopes were ultimately extinguished when they fell to a thrilling 5-3 defeat when they welcomed Milton Keynes. But let's start in League One with Barnsley, who, as I mentioned earlier, fell to a narrow 3-2 defeat to Blackpool, which was then followed by the news that the club had parted company with manager Neil Collins, with one game remaining in the season. Now, what did you make of Neil Collins' time at the club? And with the Tykes' chances of a playoff spot hanging in the balance, how do you see them going into their game against Northampton Town, Leon?
Yeah, I mean, it was a surprise, wasn't it? But I think when you look at Barnsley, nothing's really a surprise, is it? If that makes any sense. There's been all sorts of things that have happened there in recent times, on and off the field. Don't forget, they've still got some EFL charges hanging over them from last summer. So, you know, who knows what's going to transpire there. The run's been, I mean, you look at it from the outside looking in, you're seeing a club who are in the playoffs still having a decentish season in the round on paper. Mm. It's not so long ago that I think they had the breaking records away from home, weren't they? The longest away sequence without a defeat ever in the history. I think they've had the most away points as well, but then you flip it round and you say that they've lost the last four. Something had gone off the rails, I think it's fair to say, in terms of the form. They'd won just two in 11 games. You know, not so long ago, there was the game against Bolton, wasn't there, in March? And you know, they were leading 2-1 and they equalised right at the death. Bolton scored right at the death and felt like a big moment. And then they don't seem to have recovered from that.
No.
Sort of on the pitch. I can't remember if Stuart did that game, he might have done, but I know I did the next game against Lincoln and they got absolutely hammered 5-1. And one or two other little things as well, a significant injury to Donovan Pines, that seems to have hit them defensively because they started to leak goals all over the place. I wasn't there at Blackpool on Saturday. Myself and Stuart were otherwise engaged. I'm led to believe it was a really, really poor performance. And, you know, the mood music amongst the supporters, there have been some grumbles at Neil Collins. I think that has been all season, to be fair. I mean, even it's been about Lincoln in the reverse game against Lincoln in November. There were some sort of songs decrying the style of football, this, that and the other, and it's built up again, unfortunately. And yeah, it is a It's just the timing more than anything, isn't it, with one game to go?
Yeah.
I mean, two wins in 11 is dreadful form, but then you look at it and Barnsley is still in, you know, the season's on the line, they're still in the playoffs and in with a chance of a promotion. And it suggests to me that it's keeping very quiet at Barnsley this week. There's some reports that they'd lined up, an Austrian coach, Dominic Thalhammer, with a view to bringing him in after dispensing with the services of Collins. I mean, looking at it and sort of my journalistic antenna, I suggest it looks like they have lined somebody up.
Yeah.
But and I know for a fact that Neil Collins was a big surprise to him from what I've been told. But we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, we could, the course of events could, you know, bypass this podcast. But I think the simple thing to say is, it's a massive game for Barnsley on Saturday. They do look vulnerable. There's a few variables. There's big players who are out of contract at the end of the season who, you know, the smart bunny is on them leaving. You know, Devante Coles, there's Jordan Williams, Nicky Cadden and Herbie Kane as well. Big players for Barnsley. A couple of, well, lone players as well and some big ones there. You know, John McAtee and Liam Roberts. It doesn't feel right, doesn't it? But they've just got to, for the club's sake, they've just got to try and galvanise themselves. They've got one more chance to finish it off. And if they can clinch playoff participation on Saturday, then things will turn and become a little bit positive again. So I think there's a few factors in the decision to part company with Collins. There's the form aspect of it. I think things like season tickets will come into play as well. You know, we spoke about Rotherham last week as well. That had a big, I think, bringing back Steve Evans, a big thing about that, they'll lose money from going down. We've got to think about season tickets. What do you do to generate interest and get somebody in to galvanise the town? They've got Steve Evans in. So, yeah, it's a lot of factors thrown into the pot there for Barnsley, but whoever takes charge on Saturday, big game in the context of the season, which they really have to win to create a bit of positivity again.
Yeah,
it just all feels a bit odd to me. I mean, Leon's outlined the reasons why Collins has gone. You know, the form poor, the football not great. There was a lot of hostility at Blackpool. So in isolation, you know, you can see all that. You can make the argument about whether he should have had more time or not.
Mm.
But it's just the fact that, you know, this game against Northampton is a huge, huge game for them.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, so to have a caretaker manager in charge, if that's what happens, just seems a massive gamble. And, you know, with the greatest respect to Martin Devaney, he's done the job before. He did it after Poirier's bargain, but only for three games, all lost sort of thing. I mean, if they were going to go down the caretaker route, you'd think they'd pick up the phone. You know, they've got Paul Heckingbottom on the doorstep. They've got Danny Wilson on the doorstep.
Yep.
You know, Mick McCarthy's, you know, on the market. There are people there who could come in with a bit of experience and just set the team up for this game. As Leon says, it smacks of, you know, they've got somebody else lined up. But we know in this post-Brexit era, it takes a long time just to get visas and that sort of thing sorted out. So to sack somebody on the Monday and have a foreign coach come in by the Saturday, and let's be honest, you don't want a foreign coach in by Saturday for a Saturday game. You want them in by Wednesday, Thursday at least, you know, that seems really ambitious for me. To ask somebody who's new to the league to come in under those circumstances as well. You know, we've seen how long it took Danny Rill to find his feet, Andre Breitenreiter. It's natural. It all just seems a bit odd, the timing of it, and just a really big gamble. And it's not that it can't work, but it's just that, you know, you're gambling with pretty high odds here, and it seems to me too important a game to do that. Now, obviously, the counter argument is that things weren't working under Neil Collins. You know, they were losing games. If he'd stayed in charge, that, you know, they wouldn't make the playoffs on the final day. But to go down quite the route that they have just seems odd. As Leon says, it's not like this discontent about Neil Collins has suddenly appeared.
No.
You know, we know the Barnsley fans have been happy for a few weeks. This decision must have been ticking around in people's heads. in the weeks leading up to it. And it just seems like, you know, we, Leon and I talk a lot on this podcast about teams not panicking at this stage of the season. It feels like Barnsley's board have panicked. Yeah.
It feels to Mammy almost indirectly, to me, represents a bit of a team talk to the chasing clubs as well. I mean, you've got Lincoln, you've got Blackpool still, who've got a minor chance. Their supporters and the clubs are going to be looking at events in Barnsley thinking something's not quite right there. You know, there's a good chance that, well, you know, it wouldn't constitute a massive shock that if they did lose on Saturday, even though they're playing a team who have nothing to play for. It's, the mood music there, it just isn't right, is it? And I feel for Martin Devaney in some respects. He's, you know, it's a bit of a hospital pass for him, really, isn't it? You know, it's like, there you go, you sort of get on with it. But, you know, reading the sort of, I've said a little glance at the statement, it does sort of imply that they've sort of got someone lined up. It's talking about updating the supporters in the coming days and crucial season conclusion ahead. You know, it suggests to me they've got somebody lined up, but you've got to get, Stuart says, you've got to get all your ducks in a row, haven't you? And this is something that it's something that Barnsley are no strangers to. You think that was the infamous episode a few years ago when, I mean, without even first going into the details of the quality of the signings in Alari and Leary Seca, there was a huge red tape issues regarding them coming in, and, you know, there was a bit of notoriety for the Barnsley board then. And, you know, this, you think as well, this is a big moment for Barnsley, the people in the corridors of power at Barnsley. There's been some big changes there earlier this year. They brought a new sporting director in Ladd, and saw him as, well, it's the first time Barnsley have actually had somebody in that role. It's a newly created role, and there's the chief executive officer, John Flatman, as well. And if this goes wrong, if you know, they don't manage to get this guy who they're reportedly chasing, you know, they're going to get the comeback from that. So, yeah, another episode where the club are in the spotlight again.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you think they'd have him in for the playoffs, but the way things are going, we don't know if Barnsley are going to be in the playoffs.
No.
You know, that's the point. If they're just giving themselves a couple more weeks, then it might have made a bit more sense. Either keep Neil Collins on, or, as I say, pick up the phone to someone like Heckenbottom or what have you. You'd need Martin Devaney's input because he knows the squad, but somebody who just, you know, has some management experience. Because with the best will in the world, if everyone listening to this podcast thinks about the first time you did your first job, you're not on it in week one. You know, it takes you weeks to feel your way in. So as Leon says, it's a real hospital pass to Martin Devaney to do that. You're basically relying on sort of new manager bounce, you know, players' mental reaction rather than anything sort of technical or coaching wise. And as I say, that's not a dig at Martin Devaney, who's, you know, I'm sure he's a very good coach and given time could do things, but there's a big limit to what you can do. You know, in such a short period. And as Leon says, if they, you know, this attempt to get someone else in, I very much doubt they've even been able to tell Martin Devaney, you're in charge for this week. You know, it's really a take it day by day, training session by training session thing. So it's a really difficult position for all concerned, because you said we don't know who's going to be in charge. Therefore, we don't know what formation we're going to play. Are they going to play? We don't know. You know, what players are going to be picked, and you know, we're talking here. We're actually talking on Wednesday morning. Well, the prep should be well underway by this stage of things. So you are relying on winging it quite a lot, and on a really big day for Barnsley football.
Yeah. You think if they'd, whether you would agree with it or not, if they'd made the decision, that you would have thought that the time to have done it, they had 13 days in March. Yeah. They didn't play. I think it was from something like the 15th, the 16th, until Good Friday. So, you know, it's basically a couple of weeks there, isn't it?
Yeah.
You have concerns about the future, the direction of the club, the playing side of the club in the short to medium term. That's when you make a change, isn't it? And then you bring somebody in who's allowed an acclimatisation period. But, you know, that's it's the opposite of what's happened, isn't it?
Yeah. Next, let's turn our attention to the Championship and start with Huddersfield Town, who fell to a 4-0 thrashing against Swansea City, which dealt their survival hopes a heavy blow. Now, with the Terriers still in the bottom three and seeing the effect that this result has had on their goal difference, could we see their fight for survival go down to the final day, Leon?
I think heavy blows, putting it mildly, Mark, to be honest, it was just a catastrophic blow. I mean, it had to one of those games where it had to be seen to be believed. I did the Huddersfield Sheffield Wednesday game, and it felt a little bit like that, really. A bit of a nothing game, 0-0. And Sheffield Wednesday went to pieces on that day in February, and the same thing arrived with Bells on Saturday for Barnsley, Huddersfield. And you have to think of big moments in seasons. It was 0-0, and Huddersfield had a chance. Delano Bergsson did very well to you know, he was perceptive, and he spotted a short back pass from one of the Swansea centre halves, got in there before the Swansea keeper Rushworth. He's got two teammates there to square it to. 1-0, and the mood of the the stadium is lifted. But he went for glory, and it was blocked. And it just such a huge moment in Huddersfield's season. You know, straight away the fans booed Bergsson, and a couple of minutes later, he was part of a triple substitution. Swansea made three substitutes not so long after. And Lowe gets the first goal, and then Huddersfield totally went to pieces. The second goal, you know, it was a sort of goal that you see in a Cubs match, to be honest. You know, the goalkeeper got the ball, he literally booted it to the left flank. There was no one there. Then it was 2-0, and just game over. The thing about Huddersfield, I think we've mentioned it before, look, you look at the game they've got on Saturday, and in some respects it's the best possible game that they could have. They're playing a rival just above them, 2 points above them. They win that, they can reel them in, and they've got a little bit of a chance going into the final day. But then, you know, they've obviously got Ipswich, and there's a good chance they could be fighting something for totally different. It's one of the fixtures you certainly wouldn't choose to go on the last day. I just worry that Huddersfield have, you know, we're talking about, you know, the variables at Barnsley thrown into the fray, and thinking, oh, it doesn't look good for them, and that it's even worse for Huddersfield, really. I think the mood music there is dreadful. There were chances of, you're not fit to wear the shirt at the end of the game. There were one or two players chirping back. The comments of, I think he's trying his best, Andre Breitenreiter, and you know, he was basically saying, well, I can do all I can do. I can set up the team. We did it tactically against Bristol. Follow my messages. We were pressing as groups. You know, it was critical of the decision making. I think that's been a key aspect in Huddersfield's season. You look at the results this season. I think there must be seven or eight times they've conceded four goals or more, haven't they? You know, in little goals in clusters and clumps, and that suggests to me that, you know, the sort of group togetherness and organisation just isn't there, and it certainly wasn't on a Saturday. And you know, Brighton was saying, you know, it's all right me teaching them and all this, but what about the will of the players to work it out themselves? He was questioning that, and I just think on a simple level, they've just taken so much punishment this season, haven't they? You know, you think about the hammering they took to Leeds. There was there's quite a few more. They got a big beating at Birmingham. There were 1-1 against Preston a few weeks ago. They conceded three goals at the death. Then there was the huge, I think when they do look back, this will be a huge moment. The events, what happened at Ashton Gate with a dreadful penalty awarded against them. How much more psychologically do you think they can take? And that's my sort of fear for Huddersfield, amongst the many fears. It just doesn't smell right. And we'll probably go on to talk about Sheffield Wednesday later. And you know, they've got you look at them and survival fights, and they've just got so much more sort of ticks in the box going for them. You know, they've got a crowd there who are all together. They're all on the same page. The glass is half full. They went to Blackburn with 7,500 fans and got the win that they wanted. You know, Huddersfield, they made a big a big drum roll to try and fill out the stadium on Saturday. There were big gaps in areas of that stadium. There's a certain amount of apathy there. So they've got one chance, they've got one cup final. But I think they're swimming against the tide a little bit, if I'm all honest. And if they do manage to do it, hats off, it's an amazing escape, but you just don't get that feel at the minute. But hopefully I'm wrong.
It's that disunity that really worried me, you know, reading Leon's report, looking at his tweets during the game, you know, that you're not fit to wear the shirt and all this sort of stuff. Because, you know, as Leon's outlined, they've had some big defeats this season. They have, in fairness, picked themselves up off the canvas a few times. But, you know, we talked last week about home disadvantage. At home to Birmingham, this should be a really big opportunity. Oh. But if the crowd are on their backs from the start, you know, if they're still angry with Delano Bergsog, if they're still angry with all of the players for not showing that will Leon talked about, you know, and Andre Breitenreiter talked about, then that's one big thing in their favour out the window straight away. And it's not just an advantage taken away, it's a full-on disadvantage.
Yeah.
I say apathy is one thing. You know, if they get apathy, that's probably a tick in the box, a kickoff, if it's not outright hostility. And they need everyone to pull together and just to forget about what happened last week and move on. And that's going to be a lot easier said than done. It just did have the... I say, we've seen quite a few of these results for Huddersfield. We've even seen one in their favour against Sheffield Wednesday. But a lot of these big snowballing defeats... And as Leon says, you wonder how many times they can go to the well. But that one just felt hugely significant and made even more significant by what Sheffield Wednesday did the next day. You really do worry about their ability to do it. And you know, from months out, you were looking at Huddersfield's fixture list thinking, get it done by game 45.
Yep.
Don't take it to Ipswich. Well, that's an impossibility now. And again, as we've discussed a lot with regards to Leeds United and what have you, that looks like it's going to the last day. There's going to be none of this Ipswich are already up or and in passing mode, or Ipswich have already missed out and downbeat. They're going to really need it too, and obviously they're a really good side. So, yeah, you worry about the dressing room, you worry about the terraces, you know, as I say, if they do beat Birmingham, suddenly whole mood music changes completely. It just feels like a really big if now.
Yeah.
I mean, not a simple thing, but you look at it, what side does it pick? Can it?
Yeah.
Would Breitenreiter pick Bergsog after the...
Exactly.
After the stick that happened when he came off?
Yeah.
I think as well, he was the player involved in the game at Preston when, obviously, emotions were running high. They conceded three goals at the end of that game. They went over to clap the away supporters at Deepdale. And Bergsog, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It shows he's got a heart and cares in some respect, but he was engaging with the supporters. You know, can he be a brave manager who picked him on Saturday? And, you know, issues as well as at the back. Tom Lee's the sort of player you think you'd need on Saturday to compound things. He came off right at the end with an injury issue against Swansea. I've been critical of him a little bit at times this season, but it was a game on Saturday where they really, really missed Jonathan Hogg. Someone just after Swansea scored that first goal. I mean, in the event, a draw wouldn't have been a bad result, would it, really, if they'd have managed to even get that? But it was 1-0. They just needed somebody in there in the middle of the pitch just to say to players, look, hey, come on. We don't down tools here. We keep on message, but the total opposite applied. Players were just doing their own thing, and it just looked like a team of individuals, sadly. And you know, that's the thing that makes you really worry for Huddersfield. But they've just got to somehow. I don't know how to do it, but they've got to embrace this game on Saturday. You know, it's a good game, and if you look at it on a blank piece of paper and look at the table, take everything else out, they've played 44 games. They're playing a team who are a direct rival, just 2 points above them. They win that, they go above them, and then they take it to the last day at least. And then you never know, do you? It would be some turn up if Huddersfield did turn it around, but you just don't know. So they've just got to, somehow they've got to declutter the heads. You know, Andrew Brighton, I think that's going to be as big as anything this week. to do that as much as all the tactical stuff is, just to somehow declutter and ready themselves to go again.
You would hope there's been some blazing arguments that, well, I was going to say Canal's side, probably hopefully before they even got there, you know, in the dressing room on Saturday, the air has been cleared and that teams can move on. Because we do some, you know, you do sometimes see this where teams hit an absolute nadir and it does clear things out. But I agree with Leo. Not to dig him out and pick on one individual, but Bergsvåg does seem to sum up them at the moment. Huddersfield at their best are a real collective. You know, getting the most out of what they have, and people like Leeds and Hogg typify that. You know, they have their faults, but they battle their way through and make the most of it. Bergsvåg, you get the impression that if he wants to play on Saturday, it would be, his mindset would be, well, I'll show everyone I'll win this game on my own. You know, he's a very individual player in a team that really can't afford that sort of mindset. But as I say, he's far from this. This is a team failing. It's far from just being at his door.
It's a club failing, Stuart, as well.
It is. You're absolutely right. It's as with most teams in relegation battles. It's a litany of bad decisions off the field and bad performances on it adding up. But we'll see. As I say, we'll be singing a completely different tune if they beat Birmingham City, but it feels a long way off right now.
No, and one thing quickly, the Birmingham fans, they've been here many, many, many times. I think even a couple of decades ago, they might have even survived at Huddersfield, but this is a familiar sketch to Blues fans. They're a really raucous set of fans at this time of year, and they will provide a lot of petrol for the Birmingham players on Saturday, and you know, part of the ticket on Saturday is Huddersfield fans. Look, they're probably feeling sorry for themselves. I get that, but just one last afternoon of defiance to really get behind them, because that's, I think, the crowd's going to play a part as well on Saturday.
And next, I'd like to talk about Rotherham United briefly, who, as we mentioned earlier, have reappointed Steve Evans as manager. Now, what do you make of his return to the club, and do you think that this could be really helpful for the club going into next season in League One, Stuart?
Well, there's two ways I look at it. With Steve Evans in the door, Rotherham are much more likely to get promoted next season.
Yep.
That is the thinking, and that is why he's back, and we know what a great affinity he's got with the club, and, you know, even if you take that out of the equation, we know what a good operator he is at this level. He will get results. He will sort out the team. The other side of it is what Leon and I were talking about a couple of weeks ago, as to whether that should actually be the priority this season, next season, I should say. It feels to me, I mean, Rotherham were very clear when they appointed Steve Evans. We brought him in because promotion is our overriding priority. Now, we were debating the other week whether they actually need to almost take a hit for a season and sort out the structure of things. And almost Rob Scott's job as director of football become more important than, you know, the manager, the coach's job for a year. Well, Rotherham have clearly decided that's not the case. And I don't think you can ever really be too critical of a football team for trying to win as many games as possible and finish as high up the table. But it does feel a little bit short-sighted. It feels a little bit like a sticking plaster where major surgery is needed. So nobody will be complaining if Steve Evans wins promotion in the summer, next summer, as, you know, I think there's a very good chance he will. But it's kicked the can down the road in terms of the other things that they need to sort out of that football club, and it won't be impossible to do both in parallel. But obviously, every time there's a decision to be made, the first team and the short term future is going to take priority, and that's the decision they've made. They're perfectly entitled to make it, but I just feel like that's maybe the wrong decision at this point in time.
Yeah,
I think it's the jam today argument, jam tomorrow, and. You know, look, Tony Stewart's been running the club for a long time, and he did save Rotherham United, and you can see part of it is this is my way. We've had the sort of new age coaches, if you like, they start on the other end. You know, let's be frank about it. I know for a fact that Stewart had to be talked about going for and bringing Evans back in even earlier. And part of him thinks that if Rotherham had done that last, it was December, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They'd have had a chance of staying up in the division, and he was keen to do that. And he's brought Evans back, and I'm sure that Rotherham will be in the fray for promotion next season. And you know, I just look at Tony as well. I may be wrong. He's of a senior age. He's probably not going to be. You know, you can't imagine. I think it's fair. You probably can't imagine him running Rotherham United in 10 years' time. With all due respect, I mean, he might be. Who knows? But a little bit of a last throw of the dice sort of aspect to this. Bring Evans back, and they maintained a good relationship, a friendship. They spoke about Evans spoke about Tony Stewart and his family coming to his daughter's wedding, for instance. So that they've kept in touch, and. You know, Evans always going to jump at the chance. He's spoken about this is where he's been happiest as a manager in football. It's his club, if you like, along with Glasgow Celtic. You know, when he was asked if he was interested in coming back to Rotherham, he couldn't get up here fast enough. He spoke about it coming home. And so yeah, I think entertainment and fun will be back on the. Yeah. On the menu at Rotherham United, and I mean that's no bad thing, isn't it? After the season, the fact you know only 4 wins, which is totally unacceptable and ridiculous. But I agree with Stuart. Will it solve out the long term structural issues with Rotherham United in terms of you know the sort of identity of the club, sorting out the youth side of it, bringing in players through the academy, all those sort of things, but then part of you think, well, Rotherham are just sort of thinking to thine own self be true. Let's focus on what we are, and not what we should be. You know, there are a lot of good aspects with Rotherham United. You look at them the last few decades. You know, they're at the best, they've had a clear playing identity and defiance, whether that's under Steve Evans or Paul Warne or Ronnie Moore. Yes, there's been things. It's questionable about the infrastructure and various aspects of the club, but ultimately fans want to be entertained, don't they? On a Saturday, and they want to see 11 players giving their all for the club and the town. And Steve Evans' side will do that for Rotherham United. One of the first things he's done, he's switched the dugouts. You know, so he can be closer to the Rotherham fans in the Tivoli end, and also being the ear of the fourth official. So he's already doing it his way, but. Yeah, I agree with Stuart. I think in the long-term evolution of the club, I'm not quite sure what this will achieve. But if you want in a sugar rush of fun, results, performances, players who want to wear the shirt, then it's a good appointment.
Yeah, I agree.
And next we look at Sheffield Wednesday, who were able to climb out of the bottom three for the first time since the opening day of the season, when they claimed a valuable 3-1 victory over Blackburn Rovers. Now, I think it's fair to say that the Owls were somewhat fortuitous, seeing as the Blackburn Rovers goalkeeper was at fault for 2 of their goals. But what was your assessment of the game, and could we also see their fight for survival go down to the final day, Stuart?
We'll just take everything Leon said a few minutes ago about Huddersfield and reverse it, and that's about right, really. You know, they did have luck in terms of 2 of those goals, but on the flip side, they had 2 centre backs go off injured inside an hour. You know, there was a lot of adversity to overcome. There were a lot of opportunities for them to feel sorry for themselves, which they refused to take. And there is a real unity about them. I say to see Dom Iorfa be told, right, we're not picking you in the back three today. And when Michael Ahekwe goes off injured, we're going to go with Bambo Diaby instead. And then when Bambo Diaby busts his nose, oh, go on then. You're going on, you know. He could have a real strop about that. Oh well, you know, I'm only fifth choice centre back or whatever it is. No, he did a really good job. You know, as you'd expect Dom Iorfa to do. He's a proper professional who loves Sheffield Wednesday, but he showed it. He demonstrated it in his performance. And I think what I like about Sheffield Wednesday in this phase of the season, sort of alluded to it after the Norwich game. But Blackburn, for the first 45 minutes, passed the ball around really nicely. to quote one of Leon's favourite phrases, floated like a butterfly but stung like one as well. There was nothing, there was no substance to it. I think they had as many shots as Sheffield Wednesday for a huge amount of possession. It seems that as Danny Rowles evolved this season, he's become a bit more pragmatic, and he's not thrown his principles out the window by any means, but there's a bit more canniness, a bit more playing the right football at the right time, and that's what Sheffield Wednesday did that Blackburn failed to do on Sunday. They just, as it was by no means long ball football or anything like that, but there was just a bit more substance to it, you know, a bit more canniness. And again, to compare them to Huddersfield, because obviously it's a valid comparison when they're in there, you feel like there's more goals in this Sheffield Wednesday squad. I mean, you know, Josh Windass got a brilliant opportunist goal to open the scoring. But, you know, you look at players like Masaba and Gassama and those two in particular. You know, can you depend on them every game in a 46-game season? No, you can't. You know, they're your stereotypical young wingers who have flashes of brilliance and other times where they absolutely do your head in.
Yeah.
But when they're on it, they can provide that bit of magic. Mm. You know, you're adding Ugbo, you're adding Michael Smith's goals, say you're adding Windass, they just feel like they've got more places they can find a goal from than Huddersfield, probably Birmingham as well. Plymouth and Blackburn are very dependent on one person, Morgan Whittaker and Sammy Smodditz. And again, as Leon alluded to earlier, when you've got 7,231 fans, I think it was, including George Byers, who was in there despite being on loan at Blackpool at the moment, really behind you, really believing in you, that makes such a difference. And again, I've said on this podcast a number of times over the weeks that I worried that they had a mental block about getting out of the relegation zone. Well, they've ended that now. They're out of the relegation zone, and you know, they've got West Brom at the weekend, so who knows, they could be back in sooner rather than later. But it just felt significant psychologically that they've done it. And what I really liked about Danny Rowles afterwards was there was no talk about, you know, consolidating this, you know, we've got to hang on to this now. No, he was talking about catching the three or four teams above them, and that's a really good mentality to have at this stage of the season. I was really impressed by Sheffield Wednesday on and off the field on Sunday. Not surprised, but impressed.
Yeah,
I totally echo that. I couldn't agree more with what Stuart said there. Really clever from Roll. He's, you know, you can imagine the question saying, "Well, now you're not the hunter anymore. You're the hunted," and he's totally trumped that question with a brilliant and clever answer. You know, and it's put a seed of doubt in the minds of Blackburn and Plymouth in the process. So that was really smart, and yeah, spoken about it a number of times. This strong jaw that Sheffield Wednesday seemed to have, and you know, they showed that. I did the game against Stoke the previous week, and there's a real sense of an opportunity lost. But you know, Rowles spoke about it straight afterwards. I'm really disappointed. I'm flat. But come Monday morning, we'll get over this and we'll go again, which is what Huddersfield have got to do, isn't it? Well, it started this week, well, even more so. Sheffield Wednesday have talked the talk and they've walked the walk.
Yeah.
Obviously got a huge game against West Brom. Who knows, there could be more swings, but they certainly won't be lacking in terms of the support there, a full house at Hillsborough. And you know, you just did that togetherness among the fans. We mentioned that with Huddersfield, and I did the Middlesbrough game on Easter Monday. The Sheffield Wednesday were dreadful that day. The supporters, you speak about how important they are. You know, they could have beat it out. You're not fit to wear the shirt for the last 25 minutes of the game, but they didn't. They just sang even louder. They were loud and proud. This isn't getting at Huddersfield fans, by the way, but it's total opposite to what sort of transpired, if you like, at Huddersfield on Saturday. So the Sheffield Wednesday players will know that group of supporters who are among, you know, the best in the business will have their backs for these final two games, these final two hills to climb. And obviously very clever from Rowles in what he what he said afterwards as well. And yeah, the fighters, who knows what will happen, but they're in a decent place at the minute.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of talk within the Sheffield Wednesday supporters this season, a lot of internal debate about how and if and when they should protest about the owner, because we know they're not very happy with that. But again, they've struck a good balance in terms of not making, trying to make their voice heard, but not making Hillsborough or the away venues too negative a place. Again, you know, in some of these games, it could have been all about, you know, we want the chairman out and all that sort of thing. But they've really focused on getting behind teams. And, you know, we talk a lot and perhaps sometimes a bit casually about the importance of fans and support. But I think that's a really good example of a fan base which has really done what its team needed. You know, and Sheffield Wednesday wouldn't be where they are right now without that fan base.
And next, let's turn our attention to the clash between Middlesbrough and Leeds United, which saw the visitors claim all 3 points in a nerve-wracking 4-3 victory, which also sees them return to second in the table. Now, what did you make of Leeds United's performance? And from Middlesbrough's side of things, can they be proud of their performance? And seeing as their chances for the playoffs this season are effectively over, how would you say is the best way for them to prepare before going again next season, Leon?
I think in terms of Leeds United, myself and Stuart had done the two home games between us against Sunderland and Blackburn, and they've just been so flat and out of ideas in an attacking sense. And you know, I think that had a fair bit to do with the tactics of the opponents, which were good. You know, they block out the spaces, five at the back, make it really frustrating. That's what both of those teams did. I think it suited Leeds in the respect that Middlesbrough, it was an interesting one beforehand. Would Middlesbrough go? They did it against Leicester. They went five at the back, sort of surrendered possession a little bit against their own instincts, really. But it worked for them. They did the double over Leicester. Mm. Would they go down that route, block off the space a little bit, hit on the break? Or would they have a go? Would they slug it out toe-to-toe? And to be fair, Middlesbrough have done that in recent games against Ipswich and Hull and have a real go, and that's what they did. And I think it suited Leeds. It was a real great, brilliant entertainment, a great spectacle, wasn't it? And I think in fairness, Borough probably deserved a point, didn't he, in the greater scheme of things. But you know, at this time of the season, Leeds got the win, and fair play to them. But yeah, it was a real basketball match, as the game was at Elland Road. I was lucky enough to do that one as well, with 5 goals in that. But I think it's sort of Middlesbrough's approach suited Leeds, suited their attacking players. I think the last leaving present that Luke Haylin has probably given to Leeds is the fact that he was ineligible for that particular game. Whilst without picking on his replacement and Fernie Dykstil, he didn't have the best of games. I think it was his first start for about 4 months as well. He didn't have a good game in the reverse fixture. He actually got sent off. He obviously gave away a penalty, which was silly, really, wasn't it? He got on the wrong side of Ruta. And yes, the goal was, it was offside, the third goal, but he was ball watching as well, and he let Gonto get round the back of him. So I think if Ailing was in a Middlesbrough jersey, it might not have been as easy for Leeds. And I thought Luke Thomas, he was okay going forward. He struggled a little bit defensively as well. So I think that worked for Leeds, and their flair players who were so subdued in those games we've talked about. Came to the party again. A big call from Daniel Farker as well. Not necessarily everybody agreed with him in going for Patrick Bamford. It was a school of thought, give young Joseph a go. But he didn't. He stuck to his guns and it worked. Bamford was good. He was responsible. He got a goal, so that worked as well. And it just fell that fourth goal from Somerville to make it 4-2. So Middlesbrough came back near the end, made it 4-3, and it was just crazy, wasn't it? The last few minutes there, anything could have happened. There were frills and spills. Wasn't massively convinced by Leeds defensively. I didn't think Meslier had a great game, but they got over the line. And how big a moment in the season could that goal from Somerville be? You know, we talk about big moments in seasons. I remember the Pablo Hernandez goal against Swansea a few years ago, which effectively took Leeds up. Look, it's probably not in that category, but it's still, I think, if Leeds do get over the line, that will be a moment that will be remembered, when Somerville scored, and there was obviously the scenes with the supporters at the end, and you know, it set them up well, hasn't it, for the QPR game. You have to win that, the four clear of Ipswich, and they really do pile on the pressure, even though it's still in Ipswich's hands. They've got to go to Hull and they've got to go to Coventry. So, yeah, a really significant result for Leeds. I think, I don't know what Stuart thinks, but I think obviously the results are the be-all and end-all, but I think Leeds needed a performance as well, just to sort of believe in themselves again, attacking wise, and they got that, and it's onto Loftus Road. But yeah, Middlesbrough have, you know, don't forget they went into the game with a 9-match unbeaten run. They've kept to the true instincts, gave it a really good go, and it was a terrific football match, and they showed aspects why, you know, they're certainly among the best championship teams. But I think going forward, you sort of look at them and just getting that balance right between attack and defence. They've conceded six goals this season. Do they go ahead next season thinking, well, do we have a little bit tighter, maybe have three centre halves? I don't know. In fairness, they've got a few players out. They've got Smith out, they've got Lenihan, who would probably be, certainly Lenihan would be in the team, you would have thought. So just tinkering that approach. But I think there's been a lot to admire in the last few months from Middlesbrough in terms of the performance. They've knocked on the door of the playoffs, but you think with some shrewd additions, if they can keep Lattie laugh, bring a few key personnel in key areas, they could have a decent season next year.
I think
for Leeds, I mean, you know, I mentioned last week how Somerville hadn't really been on his game since the international break, and it was a real, this is why I'm Championship Player of the Year performance. You know, it's all well and good, you know, being the best player in the league from August to February, but it's at this time of year that you really need your top players to step up. And he did that in spades. You know, big penalty, big second goal from him. It was, you know, it was exactly what, as Leon said, it was exactly what Leeds needed. You know, that defensive security that's been such a hallmark went out the window for one game, but you know, what they gained from it was far greater, and I say from a morale point of view and everything, it was just what they wanted. I say from a Middlesbrough perspective, just really, you know, a bit like I said about Sheffield Wednesday, just evolving a little bit. Yeah. You know, Michael Carrick's principles will never change. I can guarantee you, if Michael Carrick's a manager in 30 years' time, his team will still be playing roughly the same way. But it's just, as Leon says, just refining that balance a bit, knowing the right time to play out, the right time to just lock things down. But I think generally, from their perspective, that they're going in the right direction. It's just a case of being better at it and striking a better balance, so they can, you know, if they continue in that vein for the last couple of games, I think that will set them up well for next season.
Yeah, I just think a couple of bad spells and untimely injuries, that's what's sort of finished the season. I think that if they'd have sort of dropped a little bit, the cards would have dropped a bit better in that regard, they'd have possibly sneaked in the playoffs. But I suppose a lot of teams talk about if onlys at this time of year, don't they?
Next, we turn to the Premier League briefly, where Sheffield United were pushed further towards relegation when they fell to a 4-1 defeat against fellow strugglers Burnley. Now, what did you make of the performance by the Blades? And following this result, what do Chris Wilder and his men focus on for the remainder of the season, Stuart?
What do I make of the performance? Worrying and depressing, because we've been talking since the Arsenal game about how they'd secured things a bit better, you know, they got a bit stronger mentally. This was a real flashback game. This was like Arsenal at home. This was like Aston Villa at home, like Brighton at home. This conceding goals in clusters, this sloppy defensive play. You know, Wilder said I can't remember what time scale he said, maybe last 25 minutes, half an hour, he felt like there were players who just didn't want to be on the pitch. You know, and he was very pointed in saying that Jane Bogle and Oliver Arblaster really showed the mentality he wanted from Sheffield United players. Well, he used 14 players and he could only name check two for that. That's the problems they're in. We had the goalkeeper being booed even in the first half. After he let a bad goal in and was too weak on the second goal, we had Vinicius Souza. We had ironic cheers when he was substituted. It just wasn't good enough, frankly. And so what they have to concentrate on for the games left is showing the right mentality, showing the fight, showing the pride in the shirt. Because you know there's players playing themselves out of Bramall Lane at the moment, and I have little doubt that Chris Wilder will not bat an eyelid about binning these players who don't show the attitude he wants. And just say, judging by his comments on Saturday night, that's 12 out of 14 who played on Saturday who could be expected to be playing elsewhere next season.
And finally for this week, I look to Leon for his player of the week before turning to Stuart for his team of the week. So, Leon, who have you gone for this week?
Yeah, as ever, one or two contenders. Unbelievable what's happening at Doncaster, isn't it? 10 wins in a row. It's seen some runs in the second half of the season, and this one is right up there. You know, third from bottom in, what is it, first weekend of February now fifth. So, yeah, it would be remiss not to mention a few of those names. Harrison Biggins, I think he's one of those who's out of contract as well. He's got a big, big goal against Barrow on Saturday, and it obviously followed up with an encore against Colchester. Joe Ironside, he's really stepped up to the plate. I gave him the award last week, didn't I? So probably be wrong to give that him again. But he's really stepped up as senior professionals and big players should do, and he has done. You know, worthy of a mention. I think Richie Smallwood as well. I'll have a little mention to him. He's had some stick. Another player who's playing for his future. He's shown leadership of late. Spoke about Bradford with that game not so long ago against Harrogate, where it was dreadful run. He's led the fight back. You know, City have got a chance going into the last day. They needed quite a few things to drop for them, but it's a heck of an achievement, that, isn't it? And he's shown leadership at Walsall and Barrow. But I'm going to mention quickly Luke Summerfield at Halifax, because I think we should mention Halifax. We'll know their state when the podcast could be superseded by events. What a great season there, some great performances. He's been terrific. But I think the player I'm going to go for quickly is Will Vaux. You need players, you need leaders at this time of year when fates are on the line to show direction and graft the nettle. I did the Stoke game, difficult afternoon with a result. Vaux was very good, and I know Stuart did the game on Blackburn, and he seemed to be led the way and showed authority again. And Wednesday going to need him in these next two games and a few others as well. So I'm going to go for Will Vaux, because he's the sort of player, he's seen it, done it this time of the season, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah,
excellent choice. And you know, Football League recognised the other day what a good bloke he is off the field as well, which is also worth mentioning. Yeah, team of the week. Pleasingly spoilt for choice, that, you know, as Leon says, right to praise Halifax for making the playoffs, given everything that's been against them with the problems with the pitch and all of that. Say hopefully by the time people are hearing this, they're still in them. Bradford to take it to the last weekend, I certainly didn't see that coming. I think the whole club was at a real low point after that Harrogate defeat, and the way they've rallied together. It might be too little, too late. It might not, but the fact that it's even a question going into the last weekend, great credit to them. Massive win for Leeds, obviously, and for Sheffield Wednesday. But I just cannot look past Doncaster Rovers to come from behind twice in a week, win both games. They've won 10 on the trot. They're fifth in the playoffs, for goodness sake. Because Leon says, you know, the 23rd at the start of February. It's just ridiculous. It's great reward for the fans and the board sticking with Grant McCann. It's great reward for some true January signings, like Hakim Alcon, you know, has made a big difference for them. It's great reward for the perseverance of Joe Ironside, as Leon's mentioned, for the performances of, you know, big professionals like Richard Wood and Tom Anderson. Cannot praise them enough. Really hope they get the job over the line on the final weekend of the season, but they've been outstanding since February. Absolutely outstanding.
YorkshirePost.co.uk.
Many thanks to Stuart Rayner and Leon Wopsle, who will doubtless join us again soon for more discussions on the Yorkshire football scene. But don't forget, you can keep up to date with all the football news across Yorkshire and beyond by logging on to our website at yp.sport@nationalworld.com. Or if you search for Yorkshire Post Sport, Yorkshire Post Football, or even Sheffield Sport on Facebook, you can find us there as well. If you have any questions for our writers, you can get in touch using those various Twitter or Facebook pages, or email us directly with the subject matter as footballtalkpodcast@yp.sport@nationalworld.com. As ever, many thanks for listening. Look after yourselves, and bye for now.